The Citadel Cafe is proudly sponsored by TweakedAudio.com. For high-performance, noise-reducing earbuds, visit TweakedAudio.com and use our code TCC at checkout for free shipping and 30% off your entire order. That's TweakedAudio.com.
This is the Citadel Cafe.
This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 139 for March 18th, 2015. It's also a Wednesday, a snowy Wednesday. This is going to be, I've lost count how many times that I've mentioned the weather on the show this winter here in Halifax, but we have been buried this time around, so it warrants mentioning once again. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. We cover everything from movies and television to books, apps, and websites. Joining me tonight for the very first time is my friend Alistair McFly. Welcome, sir.
Hello there. Thank you.
Happy to have you, man. This is great. It's been a little while coming because I had a lot of guests lined up, so we had to kind of like plan into the future for having you on the show, but I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, well, myself included.
Awesome. So one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on the show is because you recently just launched a website, which is, I guess, it's like a hobby blog for you. It's called OhMyZod.com, which is a wonderful pun, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
So why don't you just fill everybody in a little bit about what OhMyZod.com is about?
It's a site where I share my thoughts across three separate blog collections. It allows you to find out information about new stuff, about sci-fi shows, superhero movies, all that kind of stuff. Allows people to reminisce about old stuff as well, and perhaps even discover some shows and movies that you've probably never even seen before.
Nice. So it's very similar to the content that we cover here on the Citadel Cafe.
Absolutely.
Convenient.
Yeah.
It's almost as though I planned that.
And it's strange, really, because when I started out, it was just kind of like, I want to talk about all the stuff that I love. And I decided just to split things up into these separate collections just to make things a little bit easier to follow. And it wasn't until after I launched that I realized that I've essentially just launched three websites at once, but just all kind of combined in one. Because it's kind of like, well, I want to be able to talk about old toys, and I want to talk about old video games, and I want to be able to talk about old movies. And then there's all this stuff that's coming out that's new that I want to talk about as well. So just splitting those up to keep things more focused made sense, but it was a lot of a bigger plan than I originally anticipated.
Yeah. So do you have a regular schedule now for updating the site?
Not particularly. I mean, it's the three collections that I have are contemporary. So that's all the latest news and stuff. And that's the one that gets updated the most, because that's basically when I see a cool story that I think is worth sharing, I'll just offer my two cents. Mm-hmm. And if people want to find out more, then I link to a more in-depth article about that kind of stuff. There's then Classic, which is where I talk about old films. So I've got Jurassic Park up there at the moment, Big, the Tom Hanks movie.
Oh, nice.
And I'm also just looking at releasing one actually about Doctor Who, specifically aimed at people who aren't familiar with the show, which I found is quite a big thing here in Canada as well.
Are not familiar?
Are not familiar. Yeah, you know, lot of people who, they know of it, but they don't really know where to start because it's such a big thing now.
Yeah, we've mentioned this on the show before in that I'm trying to be a Doctor Who fan. I'm certainly aware of it. My dad used to watch the old cheesy 70s serials, with the guy with the long scarf, when I was a kid. And I've tried to get into the new one with, I think it's Eccleston is the boat where I started. And I'm struggling. Like the last episode that I watched was the Dalek episode set in Utah. Mm. And I didn't find that really appealing at all. There's some interesting moments, but it's all still pretty cheesy. And I've had a lot of people tell me that I have to stick with it, and I just haven't had the time.
And this is it exactly, is that it's a huge time investment, and it's like, where do you begin? And so I'm hoping to sort of clear up a few things like that, and just sort of provide more information in that regard. And then there's the nostalgia collection, which is, as I say, just like old toys and things like that. Just things that make me feel nostalgic and make me think of, you know, how things used to be. And even including things like how the internet used to be back when we were on dial-up and stuff.
Oh, so, wow.
Yeah.
I was watching, it's funny, my pick later on today, he recently moved. It's an artist. Just a little bit of a teaser there. And he was saying that he's gone to like some really crappy dial-up. It's like 1.5 up. It's barely enough for him to function as a freelancer. And I was like, my, like, I couldn't go back. Mm. I couldn't rewind the clock. And there's something, that, you know, there's a lot of things that I'm nostalgic about. You know, like, you know, whenever I see like a He-Man cartoon or Transformers and stuff like that, like you and I, Lego, you know, it's all this, it's, you know, all that kind of stuff brings you right back. But I do not miss slow internet.
Absolutely.
You know, like there's nothing quaint about a floppy disk and playing crappy computer games that take forever to load.
Oh, I used to have a Commodore 64 and, you know, I used to love the Back to the Future 2 game. I'm a huge Back to the Future fan. It's not a great game, but I really liked it. And when you're trying to load that off a cassette tape.
Oh, jeez.
I remember going and setting it to load, going downstairs, having my evening meal, and then coming back, and that'd still potentially be another 10 or 15 minutes before it finished loading.
Yeah.
It was a long thing. And the only thing with that was it would load per level. And
oh,
if it failed loading, then you could end up losing the game just because it couldn't load the next stage.
It's frustrating, right?
Yeah. And in terms of the internet, I mean, there's even some websites that still exist that haven't changed since those days, like Space Jam. Yeah. The official Space Jam website still exists in its original form. And it's interesting going back and just seeing the way that things were like that back then.
It's funny, you know, like as slow as computers were, it's no wonder that console gaming took off the way that it did.
Mm.
Right? When you can just take a Nintendo, like not a 64 or not a Super Nintendo, but the original Nintendo, and just plug it in, put a cartridge in, maybe you have to blow the dust off it, you know, but it would just work, right? And I mean, that was so much better than the old VIC-20 or the Commodore 64, you know, trying to load up the old RTS games that took forever. That was the thing that I found that was so rough. Like, I used to play Dune, I think is what my first big video game addiction, like addiction is a bad term, but the one that I was just really, really passionate about was called Dune. It was an RTS, and it was slow. Now the computer was slow, but the game was also not super fast anyway. It wasn't exactly an action RTS, and I spent hours playing that game, mainly because it would take hours for your dudes just to cross the map. Like, forget the battle, it's just like, well, here we go.
I went over to a friend's house when I was a kid, and he was obsessed with that game. The amount of times, like the hours that I've just spent watching him play, I was never able to get into it myself, but sort of going through all the sand dunes and everything, like all the time. It's still a fun memory for me, though.
Yeah. So do you have a preference on your site? Like, do you find, obviously you said that the current stuff is busier, but do you prefer the nostalgic geek stuff, or do you have another preference?
That's a very good question, really. It's one of those things that everything excites me, really. You know, all the old stuff, you know, I'll stumble across something online that just reminds me of something like Mighty Max. It was an old toy collection. It's kind of the male version of Polly Pocket. It was like a little pocket thing you'd open up and you'd have these little figures inside to play with. Just a mini playset, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd completely forgotten that even existed. And stumbled upon that, and it just sort of reminded me about all those kind of things. And it's that kind of stuff makes me really passionate and wanting to share that and see if other people remember that stuff too. And then the contemporary stuff is, you know, just the stuff that's coming out. I mean, how can you not be excited about a whole range of Marvel movies that are planned in the future?
Yeah.
You know, and stuff like that. And obviously that will change depending on what's coming out. So, there's bound to be a lot of Doctor Who stuff, but certainly not until the next season returns.
Now, do your new, stories cover toys as well, like new toy releases?
Yeah, I mean, there's, I've forgotten the name of them. I'd have to check, but there is a whole line of toys that are coming out that are based on Ghostbusters, Back to the Future, I think they're called Pop something. I can't recall off the top of my head.
Oh, that's fine.
But yeah, so I did post about that, and those look really cool. And it's one of those, when I saw these figures, I just thought, I am about to lose so much money. I'm about to become so poor.
So you're a collector then? You've got a lot of toys around?
Not as much as I used to. Because I've moved all the way from London in England to here, I've had to leave quite a few things behind. So I've got two friends back in England who both have massive boxes filled with all sorts of stuff. Mm-hmm. There's some stuff at my dad's as well. I do have a few things here, though. I have the NECA toy range from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So they're based on the original comic book look.
Okay. Are they black and white toys?
No, there was a black and white set, but these are in color, but they all have like red bandanas because...
Right.
When the comics first came out, they were just red.
Mm-hmm.
And the colors themselves didn't come until later. I've got a Terminator endoskeleton skull, which opens up, and that's just basically a box. And I have a collection of processors from pretty much every computer I've ever owned.
Wow.
Stored away in there.
Nice.
I've got a bunch of Doctor Who stuff as well, like a couple of sonic screwdrivers here and there. I've got a Starfleet phaser and things. So there's a few things that I do still have here, but not as much as was in England. And a few things I had to sadly give away or sell just to be able to get me here.
Yeah, and you know, moving is the great, you know, culling that happens whenever you have to really move a long distance and kind of downsize your life. I've been in the same apartment now for like 13 and a half years, almost 14 years. So I've accumulated a lot of stuff. I'm not a big knickknack guy. Like, I don't have a lot of little things around, but for me, it's like books, like art books and things. Like, I've just continuously picked up more books and comics and collections and stuff. And when it comes time to eventually move out of this place, I mean, not only do I have a lot of stuff, I have a lot of heavy things. Plastic toys are light, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I like when you're saying about comics and books and everything, I had no real feeling about how big and how much space they took until I had to start packing. And and doing the whole culling thing as well is such a painful experience because you're going through everything that you own, everything that kind of represents who you are, and trying to decide what you're taking with you and what you're leaving behind.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's not by choice. Sometimes it's like, I want that, but I have to let it go. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is the most painful part of it, especially when it's something that's like that's collectible or something like that.
Well, and that's where I am. I used to have a bunch of Transformers that I used to keep on display. I think I still have them. I have a large storage room in this place. And rather than having to dust these little figurines, it was from the Beast Wars series, and they were all the trans metal ones. So it's not, I've got classic Transformers. I've got an original metal Optimus Prime around here somewhere. But I also had these trans metal guys, and it was like, you know, Megatron and Optimus Primal, like a T-Rex that was a hovercraft, and a skyboarding gorilla. The Rat Trap was a car, and I think I also had, not Scorponok, he was a crab. I can't remember his name from the cartoon. And there was a spider as well, Tarantulas. And they were just really neat looking toys because they had this really chrome like finish in color to some of the pieces. So like Megatron had these matte kind of bronze pieces, but then he had this like metallic purple for his head and his hands and his feet. And so it looked really, really neat. I've moved on to more just like, not shelf porn, but like I do have a original Buzz Lightyear from when Toy Story first came out. I want to say it's like a 12-inch action figure. It's basically the same size as the thing would have been in the movie if it was a real toy. I still have that in the studio. That stays on display. And I've got a couple of lightsabers around. I'm just looking around my studio now as I'm taking stock. I do have a couple of lightsabers that are still kicking around. I wish I had one of those Force Effects ones, like the ones that really light up bright and... They're like $150 or something on ThinkGeek. I could never justify spending that much money unless I was really heavy into cosplay, but they're super, super cool. However, I did manage to finally pick up a new set of Lego on sale, and I love Lego. I've always had a thing for it. I've been shopping for friends' kids just Christmases and birthdays and getting really jealous about stuff. And we've talked about Lego on this show before, whenever like a new crazy set comes out, like the, you know, Superstar Destroyer for like $500, that sort of thing. And, there was a new set of, pending releases coming out in the New York Toy Fair just a month ago. And I was watching a YouTube video and it got me thinking, like, you know, I should really try to find just a small set just as a treat. I've been working a lot lately and I work too much and I need to play just a little bit more. And I've also noticed that I've been spending an awful lot of time on like looking at a screen. So my downtime tends to be like meals and Netflix, and that's just more screen time. And I've got art books, and I have a kind of a mantra where I try to look at an art book once a day just for inspiration and just kind of a relaxing thing. But it's still like reading. Like I tend to just be consuming stuff all the time, and there's only so much room in my head. So I thought, you know, I need like a toy or a model kit or something. And Target, of course, in Canada is going out of business. So they got this huge liquidation sale. And
I mean, obviously I knew that Target were going out. I didn't realize, so it hadn't even crossed my mind that they would even have a liquidation sale.
Oh, yeah. So, no, it started off kind of small. It was like 20% off, up to 30. Now it's like minimum 30 all the way up to 50% off a lot of stuff, including toys. Now, the Lego got picked over weeks ago when it was, I think it was probably 20 or 30% off. All the big sets of Lego just disappeared. So if it was $150 for a X-Wing or an AT-AT, it disappeared. Because Lego never, ever goes on sale. Even Boxing Day, Boxing Week sales around here, there's nothing was on sale. And you're looking to pay between, you know, as an adult, if you want something that's worthwhile, you're looking at $40 to $60 for a decent Lego set. Like if you want a snow speeder from Hoth or... if you want maybe a Jedi starfighter or just something that's going to look cool. It's going to be for the movie. It's not a miniature version. Like it's something that's really kind of robust. And, so I actually did pick something out because almost all the Lego was gone. All the Star Wars Lego was certainly gone with the exception of this one kit that was just everywhere. And it was on sale. It was $40 on sale for 20 and it's the droid tri-fighter. And I thought, hey, finally, something I recognize because all the other Star Wars sets were kind of like, oh, here's a gun with a couple of dudes and it's like $30. It's like, that's like, I would put that together in like 10 minutes. Like, I don't want to pay that. But this is a little bit more robust. It's, what is it? It's like the little circle glass, droid fighter in space from the Clone Wars cartoon. And it's got like three kind of fins on it, hence the tri sort of fighter to it. It almost looks like it's got the same sort of posture as the Imperial shuttle with the one fin straight up and then the two kind of going down at like the 4 o'clock and 8 o'clock positions. And if I'm remembering them correctly from the TV show, they spin like as they're fighting and dogfighting, they tend to do a lot of barrel rolls and they look really cool. So I picked that up. I haven't actually put it together yet, which is sad. I picked it up last week and I wanted to put it together Friday night, but I ended up having a headache and I just couldn't do it. So hopefully, I'm going to do it tonight or tomorrow and I'm hoping to, set up my computer and do a time lapse and put that on YouTube, which I think would be a lot of fun to share with people. So I'm looking forward to that. Just some downtime away from the screen.
It's amazing as well just how expensive Lego has become over the years.
And I would say a lot of that probably has to do with the licensing. I mean, some of the smaller kits are like the regular like city Lego where you're building like, you know, a car and a truck and an ambulance or something like that.
Basically all the traditional stuff that we used to have.
They're still $40, but you can build like 3-in-1. And then you've got your imagination. I mean, not that I, you know, you can't get an imaginative with like a licensed kit, but with Star Wars, there tends to be a lot of kind of custom pieces meant to do kind of one thing. And that's kind of what I want. I don't really want to play around and kind of reinvent the wheel here. I really do want to make what I'm buying, you know, like if I was buying a Victory Class Star Destroyer, that's what I would want to have. I don't know where I would put it when it was done. But that's the kind of thing that I would want. And I was looking through the new sets that are coming out and getting excited because there is a new Imperial Shuttle model coming out and it's the Imperial Shuttle Tidarium, the one that Solo, Skywalker, and Leia all take down to the Ewok planet, the Endor, in Return of the Jedi. And it's not too bad. I feel like it's $150. It's not a huge kit. It's only like a 1,000 pieces or just under. And it's not as big as I thought it was going to be. They had a previous Imperial shuttle, and that would be something I would really want to do because that was the collector series where they come like a little stand that you put together in a plaque, and all the minifigs and stuff like that. And that was discontinued. So when I went hunting for it, I was very disappointed that now that it's discontinued, it is, of course, a collector's item. You can buy it on eBay if you really want it for $800. I don't think I think, you know, there's like, you know, I could go on vacation or I could buy a set of Lego. So I think I'm good for the $800. But at some point, you know, in my future, I might find myself with, you know, $100, you know, to spend on something and say, like, you know, I'm not going to spend it on beer or, you know, other forms of entertainment. Like, I can just skip going to the theater for, you know, a few months and save up and buy something that's going to be a lot of fun. If the Lego experience that I have currently in my living room right now waiting for me is as fun as I remember it, then I think I'm going to try and find something a little bit more, not involved, but just, yeah, something a little bit larger, something I could put on display. Like, I saw, a friend of mine, Brian, put together the helicarrier from Avengers, the new set from Lego. And it's cool. It's not super big. And for the price tag, which I think is between $300 and $500, if I'm going to spend $500 on something, like, I want it to be huge, like problematically huge, like coffee table huge, you know? If it doesn't like displace furniture at $500, then I might not pick it up. So have you played with any Lego recently? Have you seen the new sets that are coming out for 2015?
Not anything sort of too recent. I mean, I went to a colleague's house for Christmas and helped her son build a massive ship from Avengers and that was and Guardians of the Galaxy. There was one from there as well.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and that was pretty big and that was kind of fun. I mean, he absolutely loved building this thing, and I was basically just getting the next pieces ready for the next stage for him.
Nice. You're the minion. Yeah.
Yeah, so just allowing him to build it up quickly and stuff. And that was really good fun. And I always loved, when I was in London, going into Hamleys, which is this massive toy store right in the middle of London on Regent Street. And you would go downstairs, and they'd have this entire room that was basically a mixture of video games and Lego stuff. And some of the life-size things that they built there out of Lego is just mind-boggling. And it was also, when I was a kid, I went to, what's it called? Legoland in Windsor.
Oh, okay.
And again, it's just an entire theme park, but based around Lego. And I recall going around, you'd see the Tower of London all built up in Lego and all sorts. They even had a little go-karting section where you would drive around in Lego cars, life-size Lego cars, and at the end of it you'd be awarded a Lego driving license. and I'm pretty sure I still have it somewhere. When I was moving house, I do recall seeing it, but I can't remember if that went into a pile for things to keep or things not to. But it was really, really neat, and it's I had a look online, and they you know, Legoland is still there. They've still got these cars and stuff. But it's very different to just going on Dodgems where you're expected to ram into things. Here they wanted you to behave.
Yeah. So, yeah.
And when it comes to Lego, I mean, I was absolutely massively into it when I was a kid. We just had like a massive bucket just filled with stuff. And I used to do, like, I'd make the DeLorean from Back to the Future. I would make starships from Star Trek, all of that kind of stuff. But there was one set that really I really liked, which was, I think it was called Robotics or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was a programmable kit, the way you could build a robot and you could program it on your computer and give it instructions on how to move and all that kind of stuff. And there was a part of it they had was you could make three things. You could make a helicopter, you could make a T-Rex, and there was something else that you could make, but all I wanted it for was to make Johnny Five from the Short Circuit films.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember trying to build it as best as I could. It looked a complete mess, but it still kind of did what I was hoping it would do. And then they released a new set about a month later where they actually had a head that looked very similar. So I think whoever was behind it were kind of thinking on the same lines of it would be cool to have something Short Circuit kind of looking like. So the sort of flat head that he has, you know, it had that kind of head, and of course that wasn't part of my set. Yeah. I just remember going, like, I've just built this thing and they've just released something that would actually allow me to build a more accurate looking one. But that was really good fun. Everything was tethered, which was a little bit annoying, but it was a really fun set.
Yeah. I mean, we just talked a few weeks ago here on the show about WALL-E is the new creator-designed set from Lego. So they have a competition every year. And so one of the directors on the movie created the Lego kit, I think, and submitted it to Lego, and it actually got picked. So they're going to produce it and sell it, which is pretty cool. It's just like, it's really cool, but WALL-E, like, you'd think that's the kind of thing that would happen in and around the movie release, or maybe the movie DVD release, but not like, I don't know how many years after the fact. It felt a little bit funny. I'm looking forward to some of the other Star Wars Lego. I mean, they've got new stuff coming out, obviously, with the new movie. But something you just mentioned, Star Trek, Lego doesn't have a Star Trek license, because that would be cool. Could they ever make a mint if they were selling like one of those large $500 collector sets of like the Enterprise from either the original series or from the Next Generation? Like, that would be a massive kit, and it would look cool, right? Like, I mean, Lego's got all those funny little angled pieces that you could make that look just amazing.
And they'd have to have them as big angle pieces, because one of the things that I found as a child making these kits is that the Enterprise was always designed to look like it would exist in space. And trying to have something that's that shape when there's gravity generally causes it to break. Mm. The saucer section is always too big and too heavy for the neck to support it. Mm-hmm. So even though I was making them, I ended up having to just make really small ones in the end, because anything I try to do over a certain size, they just keep falling apart.
Yeah.
I think that would be the challenge for them. So I think a lot of the pieces would actually generally be quite large.
And then a lot of these pieces, these kits, when you put them together, you're actually building the structure as much as you are building the outside of it. So you never know, they might have to put like some sort of like frame inside of it in order to support the weight of the saucer section. Either way, I think it'd be...
Yeah, I was
cool.
Never that much of an engineer when I was a kid. So.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. I was focused on how it would look outside, you know, structurally.
Yeah.
Wasn't really something I was consciously aware of.
You were the architect. You were the designer. Let the engineers worry about whether or not it's going to fall over.
And I'm just actually looking in the online chat that we've got here, and Phil mentioning spaceship, you know, and...
yeah.
That to me was one of my favorite parts of the Lego movie, just when you've got the 80s space guy. And again, like, that was one of my favorite figures growing up, just having all the space sets. There was this there's a moon base kind of thing you had, and so they had like these sort of craters that you could have just as a base for everything. And seeing him show up in the movie was probably the biggest highlight for me. And especially when he gets the chance to build a spaceship and he just goes completely crazy. He goes, spaceship, spaceship.
You can buy that. You can buy that kit. That was one of the ones that I saw at Target. There's a whole line of Lego movie kits. There's like the police hover thing that comes down. There's the spaceship that the spaceship man builds. There's a couple of other things. The bat plane, the bat wing.
I was saying before how there are times where it's just like, I'm about to lose so much money.
Yeah.
Well, thank God it's all on sale.
Yeah. If I had had more money, I would have picked up probably another kit or two, because it's hard to pass up the one that I bought for 50% off, like it's really kind of hard to pass off when you're saving that much money on something that you drool over like all year round. And just can't usually pick up. That's how we've been spending our toy time. What have you been watching in the last little while that you think is worth mentioning on the show?
So, The Flash is probably a big thing for me.
Nice.
Yeah, that's, I've been really surprised by that, especially as, and I know you've mentioned this briefly before, with Arrow not being something that you've particularly found easy to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the same. I really struggled to get past it, especially as I was really quite happy with the way that they did Green Arrow in Smallville. And I just found that the new Arrow series was just sort of too dark, broody, and just not really as engaging for me.
Yeah, I feel like they tried to do Batman.
Exactly, and it's kind of like Batman is great at being Batman because he's Batman, you know, and because dead parents. with ammo, which just kind of, we don't need another Batman, just make him as cool as he's supposed to be. And I was a little bit worried when I found out that it's the same people behind The Flash. So I approached it with some trepidation, but they've really built a very different show with it, and I absolutely applaud them for that. And I was always, I never really read the comics of The Flash that much as a kid, but I remember sort of seeing him in some of the cartoons and things, and he was one of the sort of lesser known characters for me anyway, that you know, when you think of Superman and Batman being the main ones, but he was one of the other ones that I really, really loved and enjoyed. And I've seen, you know, a few of the DC movies that they've done, and I feel that with this new series they've really captured a lot of what The Flash is, you know, with Barry Allen and stuff.
It's on my mention list today too. I mean, I've talked about it at length, so like spoiler free. Specifically, I just watched the episode today. It was last night's episode, so episode 15 from this year, and it was epic. I mean, there it's a bit of a cliffhanger. I can't wait to find out what happens next week, and I can't tell you how long it's been since I've watched a show that had me on the edge of my seat like that. Probably Smallville. And even then, they only started doing that as the season ran on. They started doing that kind of as season ender cliffhangers. But Flash tends to do it every like 3 to 4 episodes. There's
Finding that they're moving very quickly with things, and you'll often find that it's not even just like one cliffhanger. There'll be like 2 or 3 things happen in a single episode where you're like, "Whoa, that changes so much!"
Exactly.
You know, it's almost kind of like you'd expect those 2 or 3 plot twists to be the end of 2 or 3 seasons.
Yeah, yeah, and it would be in the hands of like network execs. You know, like they'd want to drag it out. I mean, I haven't seen it, but from what I've heard, S.H.I.E.L.D. is like that. It's got some epic episodes, but they're all at the end. Like you've got to kind of stomach the day-by-day Monster of the Week stuff until you get to the, oh, hey, now that they're going to tie in with Winter Soldier and wrap up the season, it's going to be really good for like, you know, 3 weeks. Sorry, go ahead.
All I was going to say was that was one of the things that I struggled with as well, watching it. Like I watched about 2 or 3 episodes. I loved the flying car because, you know, Back to the Future again, mm-hmm. It kind of elicited a lot of that. But I just, I couldn't get into it. And then we had Winter Soldier come out. There was the whole twist there with what was happening with S.H.I.E.L.D. And it immediately made me think, well, what are they doing in the show? And I went back and watched, tried to force myself to that point. But certainly from there, things did get a bit more interesting. I've kind of dropped off. I need to catch up with it again, especially as I've heard that apparently it's getting good again. Yeah, but again, it's one of those things where it has its ups and downs. It doesn't seem to be as consistent for me.
And that's the thing, The Flash. I mean, no, it's the first season, which is good because sometimes first seasons can be kind of pre-programmed. And we felt a little bit of that leading up to, I guess, the mid-season break with The Flash, because I don't think it was originally written to be a full season. Like, I think it was supposed to be, you know, 10 episodes and see how it goes, right? But I really applaud the brave choices that they're taking for a TV show. Like, all of a sudden, you're like, oh, I can't predict what's going to happen in this show. Like, not at all. And my dad is always complaining about superhero shows where everybody knows the guy's quote unquote secret identity. And there's a bunch of different people in The Flash that happen to know that Barry Allen is The Flash. Cause otherwise he wouldn't be able to really cope. It's kind of his origin story of like having this help, to become The Flash. And, you know, I can see that in like Smallville where that kind of power needed to be kept secret. Whereas this, like, I mean, if you take a look at the Flash costume, like unless he's blurring his face, it's not hiding anything. Like you're looking at, you know, Barry Allen with a funny hood on. Like it's not a real big secret identity. The outfit is more for speed and for function, you know, than really to hide his identity. Cause whenever he's really needs to do it, like for example, whenever he sees his father in the show, which is not a giant spoiler, that happens early on, he has to vibrate and kind of blur his face. And I thought that's brilliant, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a really good use of using that power and thing. And they tried to do something similar just in terms of the costume back with the original TV series, which again, I really loved. And watching it back again, it's just kind of like, yes, it was definitely a product of the 90s. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they just had this sort of ridiculous costume, but again, it was supposed to have function more than anything. because every time he'd run, he'd just completely ruin anything that he was wearing.
Yeah, just disintegrate from all the friction, right?
It's
just...
Yeah, and this is one of the things that I love as well, is that you have... basically, his father is the same actor who played the Flash in the original series. And they're doing this a lot now, like they did with Smallville. They were bringing in, like Clark's mother played Lois in the original movies. You know,
Lana.
Yes.
She was Lana Lang in Superman.
In three.
Two? Yeah. Three, yeah.
It was three, yeah. And so there's a lot of the Star Trek alumni, basically, that are returning. Obviously, even now Christopher Reeve appear as a cameo.
Oh yeah, in Smallville. Yeah, I remember that. Mm. And Margot Kidder,
yes,
was in there too. She was in there for quite some time.
And it was always like a nice nod to those actors who'd helped establish things to the point where they are. Mm-hmm. And it's always exciting when suddenly the camera would pan up and you'd suddenly see this face that you recognized from a previous one, and just to have them continue as part of the family. And so I really liked that with The Flash. And they've got the Supergirl series coming out soon.
I saw the costume for that. It looks good.
Mm. Yeah, it's very interesting that they've basically the House of Elshield, the S logo on the chest,
yeah,
is just red. There's no white there. It's just the outline of the red, which is again an interesting sort of design choice. But it still does look like a good costume for it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's good that they diverge a little bit from it. Who's the actor? Is it Helen Slater? Is that who's going to play Supergirl?
Yeah, she's going to be making an appearance in it, yes. And there's also, they've also reported that Dean Cain, who played Clark in Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman, he's going to be making an appearance too.
Oh, cool. So Helen Slater's the original Supergirl. Who's the actor that's playing Supergirl in this series, the new one?
A girl called Melissa Benoist, if I'm pronouncing the name correctly. I think she's supposed to be from Glee. And I've never seen any Glee, but there's been a lot of people that seem to have originated from there who are going on to do other things.
Huh. I've seen some Glee, but I don't recognize her as someone from Glee.
I could be wrong, but I think that's where she's
Originally from. I've certainly seen her in something, though. Yeah, she's in several seasons or several episodes of Glee. Two, 3 years of Glee. 2012 to 2015? I don't think that's when I was watching Glee. She was in Homeland. Maybe that's what I've seen her in.
That's one I haven't seen. But yeah. I'm not familiar with her at all. So it'll be interesting to see. And of course, when it comes to Superman, always having somebody who's a little less known is always a better fit.
Yep. Yeah. I recently saw a trailer for The Man from U.N.C.L.E., which looks like a very cool 60s spy film that's coming out with Henry Cavill at the helm. And it is very difficult to now look at Henry Cavill and not see Superman. A big part of that is because he's
Brandon Routh.
What's that?
More so than Brandon Routh.
Yes. Oh, absolutely more so than Brandon Routh. When I see Brandon Routh now, I think of the Atom from Arrow. That's the first place I go with it.
I heard that he'd done that, but I still haven't had a chance to see any of that yet. I kind of, there was a crossover set of episodes from Arrow and The Flash.
Oh, worth it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was really well done. And I went and I watched the Arrow version of that as well, which was kind of cool.
Yeah. And definitely keep up with the Arrow, if nothing else, for Felicity and the Atom to have that relationship and that kind of character development. That is good because it's brighter. Like, it has a little bit more of a tongue-in-cheek to it. And Brandon Routh is very good as, like, the fast-talking, kind of, like, too smart for his own good billionaire Tony Stark type character. He does quite well. But Henry Cavill in this new Man from U.N.C.L.E. trailer, I mean, he sounds American. He puts on like an American accent, and it's all very like tongue in cheek 50s, 60s, hey dame, like this, that kind of thing.
Mm.
But
just like the original show.
Yeah, yeah. But the funny thing is that they've got him in a suit. Like, he's always in like a suit and tie, and he's like a super hardcore CIA agent, kind of like an American James Bond sort of thing. But he's a big dude now. Like, he had to put on a lot of weight for Superman, and he looks like he's poured into this suit, right? So you're looking at him, and I just can't think of anything but Superman when I see him now. I'm wondering if he's feeling the pain. Like, I'm sure he loves the fact that he's Superman, but I, you know, I wonder if he's feeling a little bit of the pain when he's getting cast for these other roles.
Possibly. I mean, some actors don't mind it so much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was a point where, like, people like William Shatner were having the sort of same thing with, you know, as being Captain Kirk, and it was very difficult for him to escape that.
Mm.
But then, obviously, Shatner has just completely embraced it, and I think that may very well be the same thing. I think if you're going to take on a role as iconic as Superman, I don't think you go in without that expectation.
Yes, yeah, that's right, yeah.
You know?
You're probably right.
And when you were saying before about the Supergirl costume, I was just sort of thinking back to Helen Slater and always thinking that to me, as a kid growing up, I think because it was obviously made by the Salkinds who did the original Superman movie, so it had a very similar look to it.
Mm-hmm.
But that to me has always been the sort of quintessential costume for her. And there is definitely a kind of relation to Helen Slater's costume as well. There's still a lot of similarities there.
Yeah.
But there's a fantastic photo, and I'm just trying to look for it at the moment. Here we go. It's a fantastic shot from the set of the movie where she's basically just sort of looking up and pointing up at the sky. And the reason why I love that particular picture so much is because in the background, there's a restaurant called Popeye's, and the text on a billboard just says, "Love that chicken."
Nice.
It's absolutely fantastic. Just super ghost up there with "Love that chicken" in the background. It's one of those pictures that always makes me laugh.
That's intense. So the funny accidents that happen with like superhero costumes and stuff in the background. There was a meme a little while ago. Like when I say that, it's like last year. I think it was last year's Dragon Con. It was not so much like, "Hey, here's a really cool costume." It's like, "Hey, here's a really cool costume." And then, but look what's happening behind this. Because everybody's having their picture taken at Dragon Con with all the costumes. Mm. And it's all like, it's not necessarily photo bombs. It's just like, it's the happy accidents of what's happening like behind. And it's like some Halo guy doing a dance over somebody that's on the ground, just like a multiplayer Halo person would. Like stuff like that is just, it's, you know, they're goofing off, not realizing that they're having their picture taken, you know? Because somebody else is like up close to the camera with like their super cool costume getting their photo taken. It's really, really neat.
One of my favorite moments from going to the London Film and Comic Con was going around and seeing somebody dressed as Alien.
Right.
And somebody else dressed as Predator. And they're both separate and walking through. And there's a point where they just bumped into each other. And I just saw it and they just kind of faced off and they looked like they were about to actually pounce and attack each other.
Nice.
And then they just started doing a waltz. They just started dancing together. And it was absolutely fantastic.
That's hilarious.
The Predator guy, I haven't seen it, but a couple of years I went to Comic-Con, and then the same guy in the same Alien costume. And you always know it's the same guy because he's wearing a collar. You know, so you've got this alien xenomorph
mm-hmm.
with just a dog collar around his neck. Which in itself was quite interesting. But the last one I went to before I left England, the costume was starting to look a little bit worn and battered from just time and age.
Yeah, my friend Bill Durand at Punish Props does a lot of really amazing costumes. And he talks a lot about the upkeep, like, I mean, how often you have to, like, patch stuff. So he brings, like, a toolbox kit with him for mishaps that happen either in transport or, you know, accidents that happen when you're on the Florida con. It's crazy the amount of work that goes into the costumes. I would love to have a really cool, like, Space Ranger type costume or something. not like a Buzz Lightyear or a Power Ranger, but like something like a Halo or a like Mass Effect. Something with a helmet, because there's a guy locally here that goes to Halcon that dresses up as Master Chief, and he's from Truro. And he's got this wicked helmet that he made, but he's put a radio in it. So when he speaks, it actually comes through speakers in the helmet. So he's got a microphone inside. So you're like, hey, dude, nice costume. And he goes, thanks, man.
Like, it's, oh, wow.
It's really cool. And, you know, and I would be so awesome just to walk around the con in this, and pretend you're like, not pretend that you're security, but like come up next to people and say stuff through the speaker that sounds really official, you know, just messing with people. Like, it would be so much fun to do that. And I don't know what it is. I like the idea of cosplay costumes that have like a complete face mask. Like, I know one of the guys from Mythbusters is famous for getting dressed up and going to San Diego Comic-Con in a costume where nobody can see who he is. And he just goes around the whole day being, like, not recognized for who he is, but recognized as the character that he's portraying. It would be a really neat experience, I think.
Well, what about when Bryan Cranston was at Comic-Con? And before he went on his panel, he was walking around with a Walter White head mask on. So he was in disguise as Walter White, just walking around Comic-Con, shaking people's hands and stuff, and people going, hey, that's a really good costume. And then he, when it comes to the panel for Breaking Bad, he steps up on the stage in that costume, takes the mask off, and of course, there he is, Bryan Cranston, and then suddenly everybody realizing, oh God, I actually met him.
Yeah.
Some people were actually shaking Bryan Cranston's hand without realizing that that's actually Bryan Cranston. Yeah. I thought that was fantastic. And, you know, just to think that you could have those people sort of just walking around mingling.
Yeah.
And you may not even know.
No, especially if they're like, well, for example, Henry Cavill. Is Cranston British? Is he?
I don't know. I don't believe so. He's always been in American stuff. I've never seen him in British.
Hugh Laurie is another actor that comes to mind where they're famous probably for their American sounding roles. But then if they just walk around in a con in a mask and speak in their regular speaking voice, you'd never know. Mm. You wouldn't pin it down. Like I would probably, like I could probably recognize Henry Cavill's voice if I was standing there looking at a guy that probably was the same build and that kind of thing. But just because he has such a distinct voice, especially like the American Superman type thing. But if he was doing a British thing, like I wouldn't have a clue. I wouldn't be able to, I wouldn't be expecting that, you know?
The Hugh Laurie thing was always interesting though, because for us in England, when you go online, and obviously he'd done House, and that's where he became quite well known over in North America. And suddenly the internet was ablaze with, oh my God, have you seen this clip of him speaking English? You know, British, you know, with this British accent. And it's like, well, yeah, that's how we know him. Like for us, we've had Hugh Laurie on TV along with Stephen Fry for years, doing all sorts of comedy stuff. And then he does this one role in an American accent. And so for us, it was just kind of cool in of how well, like how authentic he sounded. But to suddenly have the internet roar up with, you know, how different he sounds when he's speaking English. It was just kind of, really the opposite for us.
Yeah. And I've seen, there was one clip that I remember seeing. It was, something about a key. He's at a counter and somebody comes in for just a regular, some sort of very simplistic service, like a name change, like a DMV sort of situation. And the guy wants to change his name to a sound. I think Laurie is playing the dude that wants to change his name. He's like, I want to change my name too. And then he holds his keys out and drops them on the counter. You know, so it's like clang. Like, and you go, that's what I want to change my name to. And the guy behind the counter is like, what? And this goes on for, you know, 10 minutes. It's a very, very funny clip.
You just reminded me as well, there's a woman who recently changed her name to the alphabet.
Oh, God.
She's got a passport with this on, and she's basically gone through, like, from A through to the middle of the alphabet, and then from there all the way through to Z at the end. And, yeah, so her name is the entire alphabet, you know, just split in half with the first and last name, and she just wanted a name that was completely unique and original.
Yeah,
and it's how you pronounce that, I don't know.
Look it up on Sesame Street. There was a song where they pronounce the alphabet. So you could find the middle and split it up and then find out how to pronounce her name. I'm not even going to attempt it. I will not embarrass myself right now. But if you look up how to, like, the alphabet song or pronouncing the alphabet song or something on YouTube, you will find it. And it is hilarious. Well, one of the other sales that I actually managed to take advantage of at Target was their Blu-rays. And I was hoping, against all hope, to find the box trolls. I did not. because everything was 40% off and, you know, got picked over pretty good. However, they had an absolutely just metric ton of How to Train Your Dragon 2. And I heard it was really good. Obviously, it won Golden Globe and it was up for the Oscar. So I thought, hey, you know, I haven't seen it. I already own the original and I really, really like How to Train Your Dragon. So I thought, why not? I'll check it out. So the other night, I think it was Saturday night, I watched How to Train Your Dragon 2 on Blu-ray. So for once in a blue moon, it was not a Netflix experience. It was on iTunes rental. It was a good old-fashioned Blu-ray, which has great surround sound. And it was really, really fun. It's a great movie. It is absolutely worthy of all the accolades that it got, including something that we mentioned earlier this evening, which was the brave story moves that we've talked about in Flash. There are some things that happen in this movie where you're expecting a character to go one way because that's how Disney does it. That's how DreamWorks does it. That's how, like, that's how everybody tends to do it in these cookie cutter kids movies, right? And the character goes in a different direction and it's an adult direction. And it's very, very refreshing, and it catches you off guard. And it actually, like, there's a couple of moments in this movie where I got kind of choked up. Like, it really, and not in like a sad way, just in an emotional, oh wow, that's incredible sort of way. And it's really, really good. And if you're gonna watch it, then just have an open mind about the way that they're taking the story. You have to remind yourself that How to Train Your Dragon, the first one, is not like other Disney Pixar movies. And it took me the first 15 minutes of How to Train Your Dragon 2 to remember, oh, right, they're going to make kind of modern joke references. Like, the teenagers are going to talk like kind of like modern kids, even though they're Vikings. Where, like, that doesn't happen in Frozen, right? It's not... or at least it's not as obvious, where these guys are making like almost puns on like modern pop culture. Right. So, I mean, it makes you kind of wonder whether, you know, How to Train Your Dragon 1 and 2 are going to stand up in 10, 15 years, or whether they're going to feel like a product of their time. Kind of like Shrek, you know what I mean? Like, all the jokes in Shrek are really dated now. Whereas, I mean, I still really enjoy, the timeless story in How to Train Your Dragon, but it's the tongue-in-cheek, the little quips that the characters are throwing back and forth in, like, a dragon race, or they're insulting one another. And they're using, like, you know, modern slang. And it takes you a minute to go, like, oh, right, okay, this is going to be kind of a silly movie, even though I know it's got some emotional pathos to it. I wasn't a fan of everything. Like, it doesn't quite have my vote for Best Picture. I did see Big Hero 6, I think. Yes. I still prefer Big Hero 6.
Big Hero 6, again, was quite a brave movie in that it, I think for any child that was dealing with loss,
yeah,
it really hits really strongly on those notes, and, yep, you know, in a very positive way. And I think that was a fantastic film from a storytelling point of view, voice acting, directing, animation. I would probably say if Big Hero 6 hadn't been out, then, you know, I'd probably be following that with How to Train Your Dragon 2.
Yeah.
You know, it's because it's still a fantastic movie. And I think that when it comes to fight sequences, especially flying ones, sometimes choreography and animation can be sort of hit and miss, I find. And when they have all the dragons all flying around and stuff, I just thought that was done really well.
Oh, man. You know? So well. And as a, you know, as a former animator, like, I can see where they've pulled some of their reference material. Like, there's one, it's like one part equestrian horseback. It's another part like motorbike, what's it? Motocross racing. And then another part jet fighter pilots. There's a shot with Hiccup on Toothless's back, and the camera is on the dragon and you're looking down its back, kind of over, like, at its face, down its back at Hiccup, and they're stationary, but the whole world behind them is just spinning because they just did like a dive bomb lightning blast, and now they're up in the air doing something, like, they're just kicking butt, right? And like it looked like you've seen it a thousand times on YouTube where there's a dash cam in an F-18, you know, and the guy does a flyby and then spins the plane and the whole world behind him is just crazy, but he's stationary because the camera's right with him. And you can just tell that some of the animators, you know, had looked up footage like that and just thought, oh my God, like we've got fire breathing jet planes, you know, with personality, right? I really like some of the new designs of the dragons. I thought they were very imaginative.
Oh yeah, very creative, and there's just a whole range of. So that's the other thing. It's a very colourful movie, and I think that in the last 10 years, movies have gotten to being such a dull palette for the most part. Mm-hmm. It's really refreshing just to have bright colours, sort of returning to films.
Yeah, very bright colours. The dragons are multicolours in some cases, like they almost look like chameleons and butterflies and parrots in some ways. One of the things that a friend of mine, Tom Racine, pointed out on Facebook when I shared that I was watching the movie was the introduction of a character. And I don't want to get into too many spoilers, because if you hadn't seen the movie like I had not, and you really had avoided all the trailers and spoilers, then, you know, it really had a lot of weight to it. So I don't want to get into who this character is. But there's a very cool character introduction when Hiccup is flying with Toothless in the clouds and another person on a dragon appears. And it is probably one of the coolest character introductions that I have seen. And this is something that Tom brought to my attention. And you don't really notice it at first. Like, I mean, it doesn't stand out in a smack you in the face way. It's very subtle. But when Tom mentioned it on Facebook and I got to thinking about it, I thought, you know what? You're right. Like, that was really slick. The way that they introduced that character. They were utilizing a lot of different aspects of the environment that they've made up with Berk and Norse kind of Viking mythology, and then coupled that with like dragons with fire and ash and ice and smoke, and then clouds when you're flying. They really kind of utilize all of that stuff to bring their characters together. Sorry, go ahead.
All I was going to say was that I just, when the movie came out, I remember my first thought being, how do you follow up the first one?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, can we talk about how the first one ended?
Yes.
Yeah. So just with, obviously you've got all these dragons, which are supposed to be completely feared, and then they suddenly become welcome in this community. And for me, it's just kind of like, well, that's taken all the danger aspect out of the dragons, because they're all friendly now. And I just remember wondering just how do you follow that up story-wise and still have that kind of excitement and things. And again, just the direction that they took that in was really, really well done.
Yeah.
It's hard to follow a movie which has a definitive ending like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like when you... Well, I was about to say, when you look at Back to the Future, which was only ever intended to be one film, and they managed to make an entire trilogy so seamless that you would have just thought that the entire thing was planned out from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there was no cliffhanger done for How to Train Your Dragon, but it does flow so seamlessly between the two.
Yeah, they did really kind of mesh up. Because it's like life after How to Train Your Dragon. Like, it's like what happens... I mean, you know, with Hiccup and Toothless. I mean, how does everybody else incorporate dragons? I mean, you get to see. I'm struggling to remember Hiccup's father's name, the chief of the Viking village. But you know, like now that you realize that everybody's got their own dragon to ride, what does his dragon look like? You know, and it's called Skull Crusher, and it is a monster because he's a big dude, right? And then there's also I'm blanking on names. The character that plays the blacksmith.
Oh, Gobber, I think
Gobber is his name, and so he rides what is essentially a lava dragon. Like it's the laziest, fattest. It looks like kind of like a giant warthog that keeps the kiln going, or the not the kiln. What's it called? The blast furnace at the bellows at the blacksmith shop. So when they go out, like the dragon has to spew lava on the coals to get everything back up again. So he flies around on this thing, and it's like a hippopotamus crossed with a dragon. Like it's really bizarre looking, but it works, like, because it fits him, because he's this lumbering oaf and he's got this great big jaw and he's got, like, you know, fake teeth, and it's a really, really cool kind of mix up of like what character is riding what dragon. I thought that was really cool. The only thing that I was sadly missing from this movie for me was I didn't like the villain. I wasn't sold on the bad guy. I didn't find he was very convincing. I mean, they wrote him in kind of like the exact opposite of what Hiccup is trying to do, like, which is to be friends with Dragon. So the guy basically comes across as like an abusive trainer that, you know, like, think about like the difference between training a dog with kindness and love and training a dog with fear and violence. Like, I mean, you're going to get an obedient dog, but it's going to be a very different dog. And I feel like it was just a little bit too, it just smacked of what's the word I'm looking for? It just didn't feel as imaginative as the rest of the movie. Like, the rest of the movie was just like out of this world. I would have never thought of this in a million years.
Just more of a sort of clean cut, polar opposite.
Yeah, and it didn't really have enough of a twist to it that I, you know, for me. And again, even as a villainous character, like, he didn't have that presence. Like, I wasn't afraid of him.
No, I think as well, some of the scariest characters are the ones that you warm up to as well.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a good villain from a CG movie that I really enjoyed. Well, for example, Scar from Lion King. You know? Who else?
Because he obviously, it's that sort of cold, sharp nature where you can't predict what he's going to do, or rather when.
Yeah.
You know, with Scar.
Yeah.
I think even Big Hero 6 had, without spoiling that for anybody, you know, that, you know, the villain in that sort of has that kind of warmness yet terror to them, you know, and it's more about the drive and the reason why they are the villain.
Yeah.
Which is what makes them such a good one.
Yeah. I'm struggling. I feel like I've seen another recent animated movie where I really enjoyed the villain from it, but I'm drawing a blank right now.
I actually quite like the villain from Toy Story 3.
Oh, the bear.
Yeah. Lots
yeah.
Of,
yeah. No, know, the, again, and, that and, was, yeah.
Yeah. And that whole twist of he's supposed to be the old wise guy. And it turns out that he's actually the big ringleader, the big bad boss.
Yeah.
And, you know, whereas you compare that to Toy Story 1, where you had Sid, who is just the bad kid straight from the outset, you know, there's no twist there. And so there's not as much depth, whereas with Lotso, there is that extra depth behind him. And it's actually quite a sad story and as to why he ended up that way. And this is one of the reasons I've always loved things like Smallville and origin stories, is when you have a bad guy who actually starts out good and you've got that path to darkness. I was always wanting to see a little bit more of that from the Star Wars prequel trilogy. I felt that the jump from Anakin to Darth Vader is too quick a jump, really.
Yeah, it's like flipping
a
coin.
Not a smoother development. But when, yeah. That was one of the things that drew me to Smallville when that first came out, because it's like, well, you've got Superman and Lex Luthor, complete and utter enemies. And then in Smallville, they start out as best friends. And just knowing where that's going to end up just made me instantly sold on watching the entire series, because I wanted to see how that development went, how they would end up falling out and then becoming these historic enemies. And that's always had a lot more interest to me when it comes to villains, more just the why and the how than the what they are.
Yeah. Hades is another one from Hercules from Disney. It was a little bit of it was a funnier movie, but he was threatening, like he was intimidating, and I didn't find the guy from How to Train Your Dragon 2 very intimidating. That does bring us into the end of the show. This is going to be the internet minute where Alistair and I are going to share some cool stuff that we found online with you guys. This portion of the show is of course brought to you by tweakedaudio.com. You can go there for high performance noise reducing earbuds. Use the code TCC at checkout for free shipping and 30% off your entire order. That's tweakedaudio.com, and the code once more is TCC. Why don't you go first with your pick, Alistair?
Following on from what we were talking about before with Con Man, from conventions even. There's an Indiegogo project for a series called Con Man, which is by Alan Tudyk and Nathan Fillion from Firefly. And Alan has created a series about a guy who goes to a convention and his experiences there, but as an actor. So it very closely mimics Firefly in that there's a cancelled TV series called Spectre, and he plays a pilot, and Nathan Fillion played a captain of a ship. And, their series was prematurely cancelled. And, so it hits very close to home and stuff, but they've done this whole thing called Con Man, and I love the tagline that says, because convention man doesn't sound as cool, which is brilliant. And they do some fantastic, like an intro video to it, where Nathan's just basically saying that everything's far too soon.
Mm.
And they already managed to hit their goal. They've quadrupled it already.
Yeah.
And there's still a month left to go.
Yeah,
but it's going to be like a web series. They keep posting some pretty funny clips as time goes on. But that's something that I'm looking forward to. And again, because Nathan Fillion and Alan Tudyk are just a brilliant double act
in
a lot of ways.
Yeah, Tudyk is funnier than you usually give him credit for. You know, like in Firefly, I mean, I love the character and he has some funny lines, but it's not as silly as he can be. Now, granted, it's a terrible movie. But the second Transformers film from Michael Bay has got Tudyk in it. Mm. And he's hilarious. Like it's a bit part, it's a characterization, like it's over the top. But it is hilarious. And then you put that into an episode, like a series that's supposed to be funny, and I think that he's really gonna knock it out of the park.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to that. And Nathan Fillion as well. It's just
I haven't watched Castle in a while. I did enjoy the show, but eventually I kind of fell off. But I follow Nathan on Twitter, and he's hilarious. Mm. The stuff that he does with his fans and the interaction and the sense of humor that he has is always really, really cool. I'm surprised. One thing that I'm really surprised about this, though, is that it's not a Kickstarter. It's an Indiegogo.
Mm.
You know, I mean, I'm not sure whether it's just Indiegogo is kind of making some growth, opportunities happen, whether they're connecting with the right people and saying like, hey, look, we're trying to expand, we're trying to compete with Kickstarter. And if we could just sign a couple of, big names to help us, get a little bit more attention. But I'd be curious whether, Tudyk can speak to his choice for Indiegogo over Kickstarter. Cause you would think, I mean, obviously they're doing fine. You know, they've got over 2 million raised after a goal of, 425,000. So it's not
they probably didn't even have to talk about what it was going to be about. They're just like, so me and Nathan, we're going to be making a show.
Yeah.
Do you want to donate? People would have just donated in droves.
Loses their mind, of course. but I'm surprised. Like I'm wondering if they would have done the same on Kickstarter, whether it would have been more on Kickstarter. I know that way back when I did my own Indiegogo, I did it because Kickstarter was unavailable in Canada. So I didn't have a choice. And then I also had the advantage of Indiegogo, I think, allowing PayPal as opposed to credit card.
Mm.
So it could be that too. Like, I don't know. I mean, it's interesting to see. It would be interesting for me to see the choice and why that choice was made. I mean, it could be just a simple, marketing agreement. Like, I really don't know. But I like seeing crowdfunded projects for, I say independent, even though obviously Tudyk has been an actor and a producer for a while, but it's just nice to see fans paying for stuff or putting their money where their mouth is for things that they want to get made rather than having to stomach like another Transformers movie from Michael Bay saying like, well, we don't really want that. All that money.
Absolutely. And I think it also goes down to what we were saying before about network interference. Network interference is the worst thing for any TV show. I mean, that's what resulted in Firefly being cancelled. It's what's resulted in many TV shows just completely going in the wrong direction. Sliders, 1995 sci-fi show that I'm very passionate about, changed dramatically because of network interference and a change in producer. And it completely destroyed it from the second season onwards.
Mm.
The first two seasons were brilliant, then partway through the third season, it just really dived. But it's, network interference does interfere with a lot of stuff, whereas when you have these crowdfunded things, well, all the funding's there and the control goes really to the creators of the show, which is phenomenally important, especially in these, this day and age.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it's nice that if it has a kind of a life of its own, that it's going to, if it's making the creators happy and it's making the fans happy, then it will just keep on going, right? Or if the creators have a finite plan, like 3 seasons, end, then there's no pressure and no money being thrown at you to take it to season 4, even though you don't want to.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, I agree. Well, my pick this week is an artist. His name is Keenan Lafferty. He currently freelances, I believe, out of Utah. He is, I guess you'd call him like a comic artist, an illustrator, a digital painter. He used to work at Riot Games. I think he still does some freelance for them. You can go to youtube.com/Keenan, K-I-E-N-A-N, Lafferty, L-A-F-F-E-R-T-Y. You can also check him out on DeviantArt. We'll have the links in the show notes. He's Knockwurst, K-N-O-C-K-W-U-R-S-T on DeviantArt. He's very talented, and what I like about his work is he does several Twitch streams a week in which he sits down for half an hour, which is bite-sized. It's really only about 25 minutes. And he'll play a time-lapse of his work, usually on a given subject. I think the most recent one is about particle effects and designing particle effects as a painter. And then he'll dissect the time lapse, pause it, call out special attention to the things that he's doing. Then he'll also do like a live paint, or he'll go into a Photoshop document and break down the layers for artists that are trying to learn. It's pretty basic. So, I mean, as a more advanced artist, some of it has been reviewed for me. But he certainly does drop a lot of knowledge bombs and a lot of techniques that I had not thought of and was potentially, I don't want to say avoiding, but I hadn't thought to go that route because I'm a classically trained artist that's, you know, using Photoshop and learning some new techniques there, as opposed to someone like Keenan, who I feel has probably been using Photoshop for a lot longer. And a lot longer in a professional pipeline, because I've never worked in games. The art and stuff that he produces is very game-oriented. So if you're not a gamer or you're not looking in that kind of realm, then it might not be your thing. He's very animated, we'll say, when he's on camera. It's a little over the top sometimes, but if you can get past that, there's a lot of really good knowledge. Like when he hunkers down and really starts talking about like lighting, shading or composition, like he knows his stuff. And it was a really good review for me. Some of the things that I had been working on in my own personal work, I had been forgetting, and it was nice to kind of get kind of a wake up call. So it's worth checking out. So it's Keenan Lafferty on YouTube and Knockwurst on DeviantArt. He's done some great splash art for League of Legends. There's a couple of links I'll put in the show notes here for a redesign of a character for League of Legends, as well as a Diablo 3 Reaper of Souls fan art or promotional art. I can't really figure out whether he was hired by Blizzard to do this or whether he did it as a submission to the fan art contest they ran last year. I'm still kind of looking into that, but it's very well done. It's super, super cool stuff. I mean, just think, you know, monks kicking goat demons in the throat, and you know, if that's your thing, then you'll enjoy his artwork.
And for me, like I used to be quite good at drawing back when I was at school. I then kind of stopped. It was always one of those, I didn't like in art being told what to draw.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always wanted to do what I wanted to, and it actually put me off it for quite a long time. And now I can't draw to save my life. I've really lost that sort of experience, really. But I've always enjoyed seeing that kind of stuff happen. I've always loved it when I've seen you kind of sketching things down as well. But I've always loved seeing a lot of making of documentaries, and I love it more so when you have things like animation and stuff, because it's such a completely different thing than when you're looking at real world effects.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so if he's sort of stopping at certain points and just pointing out all of the details as to the how and why, you know, that's definitely something that would intrigue me most about it.
Yeah, no, he gets into a lot of his thinking, because I think a lot of the people that follow him ask for behind the scenes. Like, I want to know your thumbnails. Like, I want to know what your, even your thought process was before you put Stylus to Photoshop. Like, what were you thinking about before you did it? And he goes, in several of his series, he goes into some detail. He also has a web comic called Emma. And I believe it's even got some motion stuff in it. Like, I haven't really got as far as the comic yet. I'm still just looking. He's got a huge library, over 200 episodes on YouTube. So I'm just kind of going through and picking and choosing things like, you know, when he reviews the planes of the face and how to, you know, paint those. I mean, I did that back in university, but it was all life drawing from the model in class with charcoal. It was not the same production pipeline as Photoshop for digital art, you know, so it's got a different sort of approach to it. Same result, but, you know, you approach it a little bit differently, which is cool because Photoshop allows you that. Like, you almost always had to go, like, put in the shadows when you're, you know, drawing from life in a life drawing class, because it's essentially what you've got. And most people have newsprint or a sketchbook and a pencil or charcoal. But in Photoshop, you know, you could just make the whole canvas black and just paint the light if you want. There's a lot of different techniques that you can use to achieve your goals quicker. And I think that some of the little tips and tricks that he drops are really worth checking out, especially if you're into digital art. I mean, if not, I mean, it's also just cool to watch, you know, watching a time lapse of a project that's 40 hours all condensed down into, like, you know, 10, 15 minutes, you know, or 45 minutes of time lapse or a few YouTube episodes. It's kind of cool to see.
Yeah. Watching a whole 40 hours in real time would be quite strenuous, I think, anyway.
Yeah, I do that on my own. I'm there real time. I know what it takes for my own artwork real time, and I wouldn't wish that on anybody else. It's part of being picky, but man, there's a reason why I speed up the videos when I post them, because they'd be pretty dull to watch. The only thing I think would be entertaining at the proper speed is probably when I ink something. If I'm problem solving, it's a lot of back and forth. And I can't imagine that being very entertaining if you're watching that in real time. Because that's like, for example, like Starcross would take me like 3 hours to pencil a comic. Like, that's just not, no one wants to hang around for that. But I can ink it in about an hour, maybe less. And then I can speed that hour up into, like, you know, 6 to 10 minutes. And so that I find is a little bit more dramatic, you know, for people to watch. But... Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of the Citadel Cafe. We record live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on the citadelcafe.com/live. Our mobile audio stream is provided lovingly by Alpha Geek Radio. Go to tunein.alphageekradio.com and find out how you can listen on your favorite device. For the Citadel Cafe, choose Channel 1, the audio Channel 1, at Showtime. Alpha Geek has recently added a lot of video channels, so if you're into watching podcasts on videos, you can do that too. Music for the show was composed by Kevin MacLeod, and the episode will, of course, be available on demand via iTunes and our website, thecitadelcafe.com. Contact the show at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com or find us by name on Twitter and Facebook. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything that I am doing online at joelduggan.com. Please also check out my Patreon page. That's patreon.com/joelduggan. Patreon is a great place for you to support this podcast. If you find that you're getting value out of this show, for as little as $1 a month, you can help us make more cool content for you. You can also help me make my webcomic a little bit easier, and it all goes towards just really cool, entertaining content for you on patreon.com/joelduggan. You can also follow me on Twitter and Tumblr with just my name. Alistair, where can people find all of your really cool stuff online?
Well, they can go over to ohmyzod.com. And that's where you'll find me as a British enthusiast giving my 2 cents or pennies, as it may be. you can also follow me on Twitter at imuckfly. And we've also got a Facebook page at facebook.com/ohmyzod. And if you enjoy the stuff that I post about and you see me in the street, I happily accept donations in the form of a high five or a Mars bar.
You've been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick 2. Mars bar. I was not prepared for that.
I do love Mars bar.
Oh, is that not something you can get in England? Is that like a Canadian thing that you can only get here?
Oh, no. Absolutely. It's in England as well. When I came over from England, I did bring a load of chocolate with me, which I knew I hadn't seen here. So things like Galaxy chocolate, which my friends, I've had to ship it to them because you couldn't get it anywhere. Like, I couldn't bring my suit. I don't have a suit here because I gave up the suitcase space for chocolate.